You're listening to John Browner and Jason Lawhead. Browner and Lawhead, right here on the Mightier 1090. Let's go, boys!
Woo! It's a Monday. It's a whole different kind of Monday because this particular Monday, we had some fire football. We had some fire fights in the dugout. We had some kickers missing kicks. We had some players throwing touchdowns. Tom Brady had 5 touchdowns. Justin Fields played without the offensive line breaking Andy Dalton in half. He broke himself in half. There's a lot of stuff to get to. Welcome to Browner and Lawhead. I'm John Browner. You see Jason's lovely face. You will hear his voice sooner than not. We are brought to you by no one yet, but that's coming. You can hear us on your Mightier 1090. See, where I, listen, that could have been your name right there. Whoever you are, hey, listen, just be able to contact us. Hit us up at Browner's Podcast on Twitter. You'd be surprised we can work with you. Anyway, you're listening on the Mightier 1090. You're driving on the freeway. You want to, what the hell is this madness starting the show? I'm fired up today. If you're listening to us and you're watching us on YouTube, Captain the Crew, like, subscribe, share, send it to somebody else. If you're jogging, if you're walking, if you're in your car, or if you're like, just put the baby to sleep, podcasting us through the iTunes or Google Play Store or wherever podcasts are available, we're available there as well. We are the Date, Browner and Lawhead on Kaplan and Crew. So if you search Kaplan and Crew, where you get your podcast or where you get your YouTube, you will find us. It is 6 o'clock California time, more specifically the San Diego, Los Angeles area mega market. That's what we're going to call it. We are talking to the mega market, Jason. So we'll be covering AFC West. We'll be covering NFC West because we have so much to get over. We got so much to talk about. But before we do any of that, I need to, Jason, I'm responsible for things that happen in Chicago. And sometimes when black people do stuff, I have to answer for that question. Jason, can you please break down to me where this happened?
This is called the Muni Lot.
It's called the what?
This is the Muni Lot, municipal lot, which is like the cops have tried to like stop tailgating over the years, but with the new post-COVID, that ain't happening anymore. So it's a famous tailgate lot that has gotten out of hand, but not like this. I mean, this is something. But as a Browns fan, as a guy that grew up and partied in that lot many times as a younger 20-something-year-old when the Browns returned to Cleveland back in the late 90s, I can say this is kind of a it's promising because we're so excited before a game. We're fighting each other in the parking lot instead of not being excited and then going home and beating our family after the game, which we would usually have lost. So there is a few things to take away. It looks like there was some consenting adults mostly in that whole skirmish. So I expect more of that as the season goes on, being a Clevelander and knowing what happens down in the Muni lot. But yeah, man, I mean, hey, the Browns didn't come out of the locker room with as much intensity as the fans in the parking lot. But as I stated last week in my prediction, we got the win I thought we'd get, kind of one of those just getting through it and winning a ball game against a team that played really well in week one. We did not cover the spread, which I didn't think we would. That line was ridiculous at 12 and a half, 13 or whatever. But the Browns come home with a win. Nick Chubb kind of just steadies their game throughout the day. Hopefully maybe our fans can relax a little bit and enjoy the rest of the season. But that's wild. That's so Cleveland too. In a couple months, it'll be like an ice ball fight. You know, people will be hitting each other with icicles and snowballs. So they're taking advantage of the nice weather while they have it.
I thought the most telling part of that entire fight is when the black guy jumped in thinking he's going to be the arbiter of peace and he's going to break the entire thing up. Then he gets his ass kicked too. Black people, stay out of it. Stay out of it, okay? In a parking lot fight, your age doesn't matter. Your gender at this point doesn't matter. Or your color, okay? You can get tossed up if you get in the way of people trying to get a piece of some, okay? Them dudes wanted a piece of anything. And when they saw somebody else jump in, it's ghost season. So next time, mind your business, old man, you went and got tossed up.
Yeah, and it's like, it's contagious right now, right? Like parking lots, inside stadiums, airports, terminals, airport, airplanes, dugouts. I mean, right anywhere. Now, everybody's fighting with everybody. Stay out of the way and just watch and enjoy. Get your phone out, man.
So if you're just joining the show, what we were playing, if you're driving in your car, we just played a fight in the Browns parking lot between two heavyset gentlemen who had something to get off their chest, and we felt like this is the place for them to broadcast a fight of such nature. And so that's what we're going to do. We're going to have fun on this show because, again, me and Jason talked about it. By the time you get to us, you've basically formed your sports opinion about just about everything. And we're here to just have fun, and that's fun. What's also fun is winners and losers. Up first, Jason, give me a winner.
Well, I'm going to go with the Buffalo Bills and the way they came out and had to come out against a division opponent, against a team that's probably preseason-wise, the team that's going to kind of, if anybody's going to chase their tails in that division, which was proven last year, it would be the Dolphins. I mean, at least in the beginning of the season, that's what the prognosis now. The Patriots are still coached by Bill Belichick and have a good defense, but the Bills, after that first game, I just think it's really hard to shut a football team out in today's NFL. I don't care if first string quarterback went out. I don't care who's out. 35-0 was a big winner for the Bills to correct some things that people were kind of going, uh-oh, is this team, you know, is it a sophomore jinx type of a thing? Is it a layover, hangover? And they dispelled, at least for this week, going in, dispelled those kind of at least rumors or the concerns that this team may have tripped on themselves. But a big performance by the Bills, needed it and got it. And I think it kind of makes them breathe easy, especially their fans going into week three and beyond in their own division as well.
My loser.
Or my, that's,
I'm sorry,
that's
my winner. My yeah. winner. My winner. This guy. Bam. That is one. Kyler Murray. I don't know his middle name, because if I knew his middle name, I'd have used it right there at that particular time. This playboy, 400 yards, 4 touchdowns, and a last-second win against the pathetic, and I mean pathetic, kicking game of the Minnesota Vikings. Ugh. It was just so – first of all, sticking to Kyler Murray before I criticize the kicker for the Minnesota Vikings, sometimes we get athletes that are just must-see. Like Steph Curry, the way Steph Curry shoots the ball, yes, he's not big. He's not that fast. He doesn't dominate the game from a physical aspect. But his ability to shoot is must-see television in a way that I have never in my basketball viewing life had the pleasure of watching. Like Reggie Miller was a good shooter. He ain't this. Ray Right. Allen was a good shooter. He ain't this. Kyler Murray is like watching Michael Vick run and probably Dan Marino throw. Like, I mean, it is unbelievable. Jason, did you get a chance to see any of this masterpiece?
I mean, I got to see a lot of the highlights, and I've liked this kid coming in from day one, and it's moxie, and he's bringing it to the whole team, right? Now you look at that Cardinal team, and you go, they're just almost – all just kind of, it's just spilling over the identity. And that's what really shows you a true leader quarterback. Yes, he has the tools, all the things you just said. You can't teach some of that. Some of it's God gifted. It's just the way it is. But the other intangible that bleeds over to the team, right? And you're kind of seeing that with the dysfunction in the Padres. We'll get to that later, I know. Right. But that's what I'm talking about. It's the, hey, we can go out and win 38-13 and blow a team out in week one, and we can still be in a game and keep ourselves in a game and then go take one away. So very impressive the way they won two football games in the early part of the season. They were able to do it by just decimating their opponent, and then they were able to do it by taking one away and staying in a game and outlasting their opponent, who played probably a better football game for most of the game, obviously. But yeah, Murray is definitely, he's the answer in that respect. And, you know, I know AI in basketball wasn't maybe
the
answer, but I think this guy's got a good football nickname as the answer, to take it that way, because what a performance. And man, the Cardinals, they are not going to be fun to play every week when you got to face this team, because you don't know. They're going to either beat you by 25 or they're going to come back from 25.
I picked Kyler Murray as my MVP to start the season, and nothing within these first 2 weeks have cast a shadow of a doubt on that pick. This guy is the best quarterback in that division, in a division that has Russell Wilson, in a division that has everybody's favorite lover boy, Matthew Stafford, and also in a division with the guy who dates porn stars in Jimmy Garoppolo. This guy is the best player, hands down, not even close. The other thing that we are definitely going to get into is the AFC winners and losers. We're not going to do winners and losers, but we're going to break down some of these AFC matchups, AFC West matchups, because we're going to start with the Chargers. If you call the calls correct, the Chargers win the game, but they don't, because that's the way officiating works. So if you're a Charger fan upset, feeling like you got jobbed by the refs, you did. Join the club. I don't know. The Saints have a lot of tears in that bucket, if so to speak. But the Cowboys took over that stadium, and then they walked out with a win. Was it more impressive that the Cowboys fans took over that stadium, Jason, or was it more impressive with the win that they had on the field?
Well, I think it was the fans taking over the stadium, because as you pointed out, I felt like the Chargers, again, 2 weeks in a row, really got slighted by the officials in almost obvious manner. So I think, to me, from games I've watched in the last few years since they've opened that big stadium in Dallas, yesterday, that felt like what Dallas's stadium has never felt like for the Cowboys.
Yeah.
You know, even though they, you know what I mean? Like, SoFi, it felt like, yes, we knew that the Cowboys fans were going to be there in throngs and probably obviously be much more than the Chargers fans, but they took it to another level. I mean, that stadium was rocking almost like I've never seen Dallas rocking for the Cowboys. And that was, I think that was the bigger factor, and along with the officiating. Hey, the Chargers are going to go through some growing pains, all things being equal. Let's say it was a well-officiated game and they just lost it the way they lost it. Justin Herbert, he's going to have to overcome some challenges, right? That's the NFL. Is it a bad night for Justin Herbert? I don't think it's a bad night in the sense that, oh boy, you have to worry about it. Is it a night where he wants back? Of course, no doubt. But definitely, I think it was more impressive to see what the fans did in SoFi than kind of how Dallas won that game. They got out of there with a W that they were kind of lucky to get out of there with at the end of the day. So
the next thing I don't want to hear, I don't want to hear people telling me Dallas is good all of a sudden. And I don't want people telling me the Chiefs lost that game. On the scoreboard, they lost that game. Patrick Mahomes didn't lose that game. If there's not a fumble, the Chiefs are going to win that game. I don't know if you were watching, like I was watching. We gave Lamar Jackson credit for what he did last week, and we criticized him for fumbling that ball in overtime last week against the Raiders. You got to give him credit for getting the win and guiding the Ravens to the W. But if that fumble doesn't happen, who watching that game doesn't think the Chiefs win that game? Because they weren't going to stop him from throwing. The fumble just took the air out of the offense, and they ended up not being able to recover after that because they didn't have enough timeouts to stop the clock, and the Ravens got that first down on fourth down, which was mad gutty and great television to watch. But at the same time, they also knew we can't give them the ball back because they're going to win the game.
Well, yeah, it was mad gutty because they ran it on fourth and one out of the shotgun, which was, you know, your 6-7. Yeah, it's you taking fourth and one under center and you're making it fourth and six. Really? Yeah. Fourth and four by the time you get maybe first contact or near the, you know, penetration of the line of scrimmage. So very gutsy call. And yeah, I mean, look, you know, Mahone's going to throw picks. I was really surprised he threw that one at that time, you know. Rookie running back, you give him a ball in a big situation like that, he coughs one up. But I will say this, I think a lot of quarterbacks, just to disagree with you a minute, I think a lot of quarterbacks today would be getting crucified way more than Patrick Mahomes is for that interception, right? I think in that situation where the Kansas City Chiefs are where they are, you know, even a Tom Brady with 7 Super Bowl rings, a lot of people today would be going, what was Brady do?
And here we go. Perfect. I'm so glad you brought that analogy in. Because listen, the other two teams in the division, Denver beat Jacksonville, and the Raiders beat the Steelers, which we'll talk about that after this. But I'm glad you brought that up, because the reason why nobody's all over Patrick Mahomes because of that throw and the way that he got that interception when he did and how he did is because people knew he was going to still find a way to win the game. If that was the last interception that ended the game, yeah, people would be all over him. But the fact that he made that interception, and people have seen him do that before, come down and scoring two plays in 10 to 15 seconds, he's got more real estate to make a mistake like that than any quarterback in the NFL. And it's not even close, because you're right. Tom Brady is quite possibly the greatest quarterback to ever put a football uniform on. He makes that throw. People are saying Brady's old. Brady's losing
immobile. They're saying, why is he run? Why is he stumbling out of the pot? Why is he throwing under with his feet out underneath him? I mean, a lot of quarterbacks. Baker Mayfield's going to get crucified. Obviously, he doesn't have a Super Bowl ring. I'm just saying. And the Super Bowl ring and the MVP, there's no doubt that helps him. But Lamar Jackson would have got crucified, even if it was the same situation. Even if Aaron later Rodgers on, well. A rookie running back fumbled behind him to lose that game. That's all I'm saying. And I'm just saying that, you know, Mahomes got off easy, I think, last night from the Collinsworth and the pundits and the Monday morning quarterbacks and whatnot.
If you Mrs. Mahomes, you probably checking those text messages Chris Collinsworth sending your husband, because, buddy, it was a little – it was almost X-rated and faded last night when every time he did anything – oh, my God. He called a timeout. Look how his arms goes above his head, and he puts his hands together with a timeout. Woo!
I know, man. It's like this guy's going to either it's like either Mahomes or Kelsey. It's like you're going to have a threesome with these guys. Take it easy.
Just like Chris Collinsworth in the huddle. God. He's got to hype the game. I get that. But, bro, turn it down a little bit.
Anytime from the third quarter on, every play is the biggest play of the night.
Every play.
The biggest play of the night happens 8 times a night with Chris Collinsworth. It's like, okay, just wait for the end of the game. You don't have to say it's the biggest play of the night 6 times before it's actually the biggest play of the night.
So, yeah, it adds to the fun. It adds to the fun. But at the same time, it's like, all right, bro, give it a rest. We get it. You think Patrick Mahomes is really, really good. So, with that said, Derek Carr, I'm off your back, bro. I'm off your back. You went to Pittsburgh, a place that plays great defense, against a Hall of Fame quarterback, whether I like it or not. Just don't leave any women anywhere near him in bathrooms or lakes or cars.
On motorcycles.
Right. Other than that, good football player. That's a big win for the Raiders, man. That's a really big win for the Raiders, because I thought this was – the loser is the fraud in this game, because they both had wins in week one when you go, is that real? Shout out to the Raiders.
Yeah, and then now that Raiders win against the Ravens looks even bigger and better and stronger. So now they're out of the gate at 2-0, and it isn't like a 2-0 like the Broncos are, okay? Right. You know, I mean, it's a Ravens-Steelers playoff teams perennial every year. Win at home on the opener, win on the road against Pittsburgh. And, you know, I think if there's anybody other than the Chiefs right now, because I know we wanted to talk about this division, to me, the Raiders seem to be the team kind of – I mean, I think the Broncos have more to prove. Who has the easiest schedule in the first 3 games ever? Probably the Broncos. Giants, Jags, Jets next week. So yes, they're 2-0, and yes, that defense is stingy, and then they look like they've got some things addressed. Teddy's playing well behind center, but right now the Raiders, I think, are the team outside of the Chiefs that anybody in the AFC West is looking at going, wow, the eyebrows are up. That emoji, whatever that emoji is, that's what I'm saying. That emoji with the eyeballs, that's the Raiders right now.
The Raiders are showing me something that I didn't think they had. I did not think they had a quality pass rush that could get to the quarterback multiple times. They have that. They've proven that in 2 games against a good team and a team that we're still unsure about in the Ravens. 2, I didn't think Derek Carr could be this consistent. He elevated that team yesterday, and I did not think I would see that from him, or from a John Gruden coach team. I'm just being perfectly honest about my opinion of John Gruden. They did it. They did it, man. They did it.
And people made fun of Gruden's calling Waller the best player he ever coached, and Waller had another big day. And I think the biggest change from what I've seen, you know, through kind of studying the Raiders, watching some of the highlights, is with Carr and Gruden. I think that trust of getting the ball spread out to more players. I think Carr's biggest deficiency over the years was maybe he just wasn't getting the ball to the amount of players. When you look at great quarterback, you'll see a box score. Tom Brady will hit 9, 10, 11 different receivers, you know, in a game. And that was, I think, Carr's biggest problem was kind of maybe some tunnel vision, or maybe not having the amount of weapons to go to or trusting them. And even with Gruden as a coach, both of those guys, I think, are on the same page with more players to spread the wealth. And if they can continue to do that, the Raiders are going to be more successful as the season goes on.
When we come back. We've got losers. I haven't forgot about losers. We've got losers. We've got fights. And we got the NFC West. Brown and Lawhead. The second verse like the first, baby. Brown and Lawhead, we are back in business. If you missed the first half of the podcast, if you missed the first half of the show, you can always head over to YouTube at Kaplan and Crew. And if you missed the first half because you're jogging or you had to get in the shower, you had to feed your kids or whatever the case may be, or it's the following day and you just want to catch up on the show, you could do it wherever they have podcasts. Any podcast platform, we are available there. We are Brown and Lawhead. You can find us under Kaplan and Crew. For those of you actually listening as you're driving live to us right now, you are on the Mightier 1090. We thank you guys for listening. If you're just catching up, on the first half of this, we talked about a parking lot fight that was just mwah, chef's kiss. In addition to that, we talked about our winners. We also talked about the AFC West and what happened on Sunday. Now, we're going to get to our losers. There's a lot of loser to spread around here. But I'm going to let you go first, Jason. Who is your loser for Monday?
Well, I'm going to say it's the Vikings. Because, I mean, you look at a game like that coming off of a loss to the Bengals that was close. They kind of got there at the end, and then they had this big lead against the Cardinals and couldn't put them away. And when you look at it, you sit there, and if you're the Vikings, you're sitting there in the NFC North, which is very down this year.
Terrible.
Right? But you're sitting there going, we're averaging 29 points a game, and we're 0-2. You know, the Packers haven't scored a touchdown yet, right? They're playing right now as we do the show, but they've got 3 points and they could be 1-1 after today, even with a 17, whatever. They could win 17-10 or whatever it is.
Right.
But that's, to me, you know, you come out of the blocks and you go, we got the Bengals, you know, we should beat or
at least, win. You know,
and we got the Cardinals that, you know, hey, it could go either way. We got to go give a good effort, which they do. They go give that effort against what you say is potentially the NFL MVP. And I'm not disagreeing with that, the idea of that prediction at all. And you sit there and go, oh, my gosh, we got 58 points in two games and we're 0-2. And so I think in a division where you could feel like getting off to a really good start could get you really ahead of the ball game, they're the big losers of the weekend, in my opinion.
My loser, I think my loser, we're all losers because of my loser here locally.
Yeah.
Listen, I don't have to tell you about this. Listen, what you're hearing is right. Maybe you may hear some voices wildly upset. That's Manny Machado and Fernando. You may have heard about this. And I got to tell you, man, the loser in this is a Padre fan. Not because Tingler, the manager, not because he's terrible at his job, not because he's a coward. And people go, oh, why are you getting mad at him for not jumping into breaking up the fight? He was thrown out of the game. They don't leave when they're thrown out. I'm so tired of people playing stupid. Chase Tingler was still near the dugout. So you mean to tell me you're in a pennant race, you're a game and a half behind the team you're playing in a pivotal game, you get tossed, and you go home?
you leave the you leave you get in a bus, you go back to the hotel? No, he's there, and whatever the suspension is, whatever the cost is for him to come out and get in between that, it's worth it. But what does he do? He continues to behave like a coward, and he hides in the hole, and he doesn't come out, and he doesn't protect his players from each other. He doesn't protect his players from the onslaught that they've now faced across the nation of baseball. Manny Machado getting another label as being a bad teammate. Fernando Tatis Jr. now getting a... he's now starting to get a bad rap because this guy has mismanaged this thing. And as much as we want to be mad at AJ Preller, he ain't there every day. This guy is. And if you let this guy continue to manage, we are going to continue to become an ugly case of what could have been. We started the season at the highest of heights. We are now about to finish under 500. And I believe he played a large part in it. I know that there are other factors in it, but the easiest thing to get rid of is him because you can't get rid of Eric Hosmer. They tried. Nobody would take his money. They tried to get rid of Will Myers. They wouldn't. Nobody would take his money. So now we sit here with this. We're all losers. We're all losers because we had to watch that. And we all got turned up at the start of the season when baseball writers were saying that we were the second best team in baseball and we were going to challenge the Dodgers for the division. Welcome to 20 games back. Or 30. It could be 100. Hell, I don't know. It don't matter. They made us all a loser, Jason.
That was a bad look. Real, real bad look. And, you know, like you said, with all them expectations in the beginning of the season, and then you look up the coast to the Bay Area and you see how Gabe Kapler is just, you know, got the controls of what's going on up there and the respect, and he's got his players – maybe not even as talented of a roster,
not.
You know, but he's got guys playing at MVP levels. And as great as Tatis is, as great as Machado is, these guys are not playing at their MVP levels that they can be. Whereas, you know, Kapler's getting Posey to play above his head. You know, they're getting MVP performances from guys that would probably never get MVP votes, right? But, you know, it's a bad, bad look. And, you know, I liked Jace Tingler from the beginning. I liked the idea of a guy coming in. And it's at last year in the shortened 60-game season, whoop-de-doo, that's not proven a whole lot, I guess. And now the big sample size is showing its face because, you know, there's just too much talent on that team. You know it's bad when Machado and Tatis are yelling at each other in English. You know, I mean, that's bad. You know, usually they'll keep that stuff in Spanish so people, you know, have a harder time.
Right.
Okay, they were really going to
look up what they're saying.
Yeah, you know, when they're choosing their second language to go after each other, I mean, that means it's serious, man. But so yeah, like, you know, at the end of the day, as much as I'd hate to be the guy to say go after the manager in his second or third year or whatever it is, you know, I don't think the Padres have any choice at this point with the, like you said, some of the guys they can't get rid of, the guys they have that are supposed to be the kind of the backbone and structure of the franchise that with the infighting, I just don't see where there's any way out. And after getting swept by the Cardinals, and now the Cardinals are what, four ahead in the loss column?
Three and a half.
Three, yeah, but four ahead in the loss column, yes, which is even worse. You know, you don't want to be far behind in the loss column. It's okay to be, you know, four behind in the win column because you may have games to make up. But the Cardinals are sitting pretty right now. And like I said, I think on last week's show, I said, you know, I feel like, you know, when you have somebody else, you're fighting within your own division like they have with the Reds, and the Padres are feeling like they've been smoked in their own division. So there's these factors that just are not going in. It's been one of the worst Septembers I've seen from a baseball team that's in a pennant race in recent memory. I mean, other than maybe the Yankees right now because of what they expect with the kind of money that they spend, you know. But like you said, this Padre team was kind of a highly advertised Cinderella story, right?
You go on the road a half game ahead of the wild card. You start a 10-game road trip. You come back not only are you not in the driver's seat, you ain't in the back seat. You ain't in that little area where the trunk is. You might be holding on to the bumper on some skates, bro. Because that's where y'all at. That's where y'all at, man. It's just been frustrating for Padre fans. It's been difficult for this for the city. They got so fired up about it. I was at an appearance on Saturday, and a guy told me who sells stuff. So now I was making $3,000 a month off t-shirts at the trunk of my car because they were winning.
Yeah.
So now he could sell a box of t-shirts for $1.
Right. Yeah, so, it's tough to watch. What do they go, 3-7 or 2-8 on that road trip?
2-8.
2-8. I mean, that's just that they actually just put the nails in their own coffin right there. And that's hard to watch because, as I stated last week, as an Indians fan, as a small market guy, we've had success in the last many years, just fractions away from a World Series title and right at the door a few other years. And we've got a great manager that's kept a small market team and a dugout. And so it's frustrating because I really was eager to live in a town and be around an October that had a lot of excitement. And what a drag, man. What a drag.
Listen, all we ask for the Padres to do is get us to football season. They did that. They achieved the goal. We're here. Period. I mean, facts be told. Historically in this city, we've asked the Padres to get us to Charger season. They're now gone, but people who still love sports here just asked them to get us to the next entertaining point in the calendar, and they did that. So for that, I take my hat off to them. But let's talk NFC West. Let's talk Los Angeles, not the Chargers, because we did that already. The Rams, who I am just not a fan of, they're helping me, man. They're really helping me because the Bears aren't very good. They dispatched them pretty easily. Neither are the Colts, by the way. And somehow, when your quarterback sprains both his ankles, which I never heard of that before, you still barely managed to win 24-27. Have you ever heard of a quarterback spraining both his ankles?
No. I mean, I've like guys that have defended me on the basketball court. I may have sprained both their ankles, crossed them over, but no, I've never heard of a quarterback. That's a lie, by the way. I've never heard of a quarterback spraining both ankles, but Carson Wentz does a lot of things. Nobody knows what's happening. So, but I will say this for the Rams. And yes, they are in that division. It isn't going to be easy or pretty, but a win is a win is a win is a win. And, you know, they go on the road and you come home with a win. And I don't care how ugly it is or what you had to do or, you know, you get kick it late and almost get it's a win. And in that division this year, that's all you're looking for when you go on the road against an inferior opponent is get out of there with a W and keep it in the ledger because other teams are going to win. And when you look over and you say, hey, we went on the road and won. And yes, you know, the Colts aren't the Colts, but look at what the Seahawks did. You know, the Seahawks, a team that just got beat 38-13 by a division opponent, they go out and lose one at home. One of the toughest places to go get a win in Seattle. The Titans go and take it away. So when you're LA and you're flying back and you go, that wasn't pretty, but guess what, guys? The Seahawks just lost at home to the Titans. You go, hey, maybe it was a little prettier than we give it credit for. So that's my stance on the Rams right now.
When you look up and see what the Titans did to the Seahawks, and if you're the Rams, you go, okay, well, listen, we didn't do great, but we didn't get ran over like that.
Like, yeah.
If I'm the Cardinals, and this is where I love it when teams play these interdivisions, because you can see what team did against the same team that you're going to play. To watch the Seahawks just get ran over by Derrick Henry in the second half was absolutely disgusting. If you're Pete Carroll, go ahead.
No, that's what's crazy is that they give up a lead to a running game. You know, it's not like, you know, you got a big lead at home, you know, and you know the only thing this team across the ball can do is run the ball at you with a lead, and they run it down your throat on the road in a deficit to take the game away from you. That's got to be the most concerning thing. It's one thing to just maybe have one of those games where you're like, hey, this guy just went all over. Threw us all over the lot and our secondary got hurt or whatever it was. We couldn't get a pass. But to just be methodically taken down like that is going to be really concerning for Pete Carroll to have your offense put up that kind of points and lose at home to a team that scored 13 and only has really a running game to depend on.
Football has a phrase that is said tirelessly. We punched them in the mouth. Like that is that's the most overused football cliche. I think if I never hear it again, I'll be happy.
Yeah, right. Well, you're gonna hear it again
because Tennessee punched him in the mouth.
They did,
and it wasn't like, oh, it's the first punch in the mouth. This was like a repeated punch in the mouth. Like, oh, we're gonna telegraph this punch. We're throwing it right to the mouth. Run, and these were like 20-yard runs, 30-yard runs. So this wasn't like one of those things where, oh, you don't know what
plays designed for 4 or 5 yards. I mean, he's going square shouldered at you. He's just going square shouldered at you, just moving the defense backwards.
At some point, and this is why I always like the run game a little more than the pass game, guys don't want to tackle that for 2.5 hours, 3 hours. They don't. And once you get to 40 carries, not like one guy get 40 carries, but the line's been blocking for 35, 40, 45 run plays. You don't want them to lay on you no more. And then that guy's coming after them. You don't want to tackle that no more. You get real queasy. You start diving at the feet. You start trying to do these lame shoulder tackles as opposed to arm wrap-ups. And the next thing you know, you look up, this guy's still running. And ain't nobody behind you, and ain't nobody in front of him. And that's what happened to the Seahawks.
Yeah.
Derrick Henry.
And the thing is when a guy like Derrick Henry is the only one who definitely knows he's getting the ball on that snap, right? And the like you said, the other 11 guys, they're tired. They're down. They're not firing off the three-point stance at the snap of the ball like they did. They're reaching arm tackling, like you said, that kind of a thing. And maybe they assume, hey, good chance Henry gets it, but hopefully I get a chance to rush the passer this time. And when that mentality is Derrick Henry going, I'm getting the ball and I know I'm getting the ball and I'm the only one who really knows I am, but that really puts pressure on the defense to sit back and go, what's going to happen to us here from now on? And you're not, like you said, in the third, fourth quarter, you don't have enough energy to strip the ball from a guy as strong as Derrick Henry. You're not going to get a strip. You're not going to knock him off his spot and jar a ball loose at that point of the game. So you're right. Like, I give Vrabel tons of credit the way he coached that game in the second half on the road to just be like, hey, look, we're going to commit. We're going to commit to this. And if we're going to win this game, we're going to do it between the tackles.
Sometimes you just got to coach dumb. Sometimes you got to go, look, this is working. Ain't no need for no master's degree in football. Let's go dumb schoolyard football. Turn around, hand him the ball. I don't care what down it is.
And that's what made Belichick so great for so many years, even in the times he never overcoached, right? Yes. I mean, there'd be times every coach makes some mistakes. You go, why did he go
clock management issues?
That was strange. There was even a few times in Belichick's career you could go back to some. But over 60 minutes game plan wise, the guy just didn't overcoach. Some guys overcoach their way out of games constantly, and give Vrabel credit. He stuck to that old kind of tried and true. I'm not going to overcoach. If we're going to lose this game, we're going to lose carrying a ball 40 sometimes.
What I thought was the ugliest game of the week was Philadelphia San Francisco. I don't like Philadelphia. A lot of people tried to ride high on them after what they did to Atlanta, and then you see what Tampa Bay did to Atlanta. You go, oh, okay, Atlanta's not good. Hey, newsflash. Philly's not good either. And this was ugly. I get it. You go across country, you lose another running back if you're San Francisco, and you just find a way. Because this, I was watching this game as I was watching the Bears game. It was a Bears game, Raiders game, 49ers game. So I'm watching these three games, but I'm mostly watching the Bears game. And every time I look up at the Eagles game, the Eagles 49ers game, something stupid was happening. Just dumb offsides, dumb like missed tackles. And Philadelphia could not run away with that game. And they let San Francisco just do what San Francisco does, keep fighting. San Francisco had two cornerbacks that they signed on, I think it was Wednesday, starting. And they still, defensively, were able to perform. So that win was ugly, and it wasn't fun to watch. But it was impressive, indeed ugly, but impressive nonetheless.
Yeah, I mean, last week on the show, we made predictions. I said I felt that that was going to be a close game. Obviously, with the 49ers going in with less of a running game and the way, yes, the Falcons aren't good, but I was really still impressed with the way the Eagles beat the Falcons and ugly. You mentioned ugly. If the Philadelphia, I think that's going to be the Philadelphia Eagles game plan all year long. I think they know that they've got a pretty good enough defense. Obviously, definitely anybody can win that division, but they've got a pretty good enough defense to win their own division, and they're going to get teams in ugly games. And maybe that one could have flipped a couple of things here or there. Maybe the Eagles, whatever, but that's the game they wanted to play. I mean, look at it. Eagles, yes. Falcons, sure, but they've only given up 20 points in two games. That's very good for the Eagles going forward. Yes. Even though they lost that game, that's a good loss. They lost to a good football team out of a good division that's got some guys back that didn't have last year from the previous year of a Super Bowl team. So as far as if you're in the NFC East and your team's the Eagles, you feel good about the first 2 weeks of the season, knowing that they only gave up 20 points and they got, you know, the Giants twice, the Cowboys twice, the Redskins, Washington twice.
They got the Redskins twice, right.
Yeah, exactly. Cancel me. Yeah, so I thought that game would be maybe a little more high scoring. I thought maybe it was going to be a 24-23 type of.
I did too.
But credit to Philadelphia. That's the game they want to be in. They want to be in those slop games around 20 points or under because they're going to have a shot to beat you with that defense. And if Jalen Hurts can make one, two big plays, that's all they really need.
We talked about Arizona, Minnesota a little bit. We talked about Tennessee, Seattle. We talked about the Rams. We talked about the 49ers. That's the NFC East and West, I'm sorry. And guess what? We'll see y'all tomorrow. Brown and Lawhead, because we do this three times a week. We out. Peace.